Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Before we get to our first interview today, I want to note that this contains mature subject matter and listener discretion is advised.
Next segment of our show, we'll be chatting with Dr. Shambha Samgupta, Sruti Disability Rights Center. So tell me a little bit about your disabilities work.
Okay, my name is Shambha and I am based in Kolkata, India. I actually work for rights of persons with disabilities, so it's more advocacy work. I'm not so much into service giving. My focus of work is gender and disability, the intersection of gender and disability.
So what are some of the most common issues facing in this intersection?
The kind of
Yes. What are some of the issues, for example, facing women with disabilities? Disability is subject to this torture or just not considered an equal. How do you go about advocating for their rights?
Yes, what I have tried doing is that when I started working at least 30 years ago, there was no disability law in India specifically for, and even if there were laws for women, they were not like the gender-related laws are not talking about disability. So these women were like nowhere in the legal framework of my country. So what I started working is I started documenting case studies initially, like what kind of violation is happening. And so when whenever I got a chance, I tried to speak with the policymakers. And now, at least, I can say that we have laws changed. We have a new law, Rights of Persons with Disabilities Act, which has a substantial section on women who are disabled. We also have our rape laws, the sexual assault laws of our country got changed. So there we could make the issue of the violence on sexual violence on women with disability included. So these are the some of the areas how we try to work.
So what are the most common violations facing people with disabilities? Is it sexual abuse you mentioned? Or?
Sexual abuse is quite common, with but then it's more on women we hear of. Because men anyway do not talk so much about sexual abuse because of the whole patriarchal framework. We don't talk about abuse, so we do not get so many cases. But otherwise also in my country, like as it is, our built-in environment is not accessible. It's not barrier-free. So there's a lot of barriers. Even if you want to go in the road, take a bus, nothing is accessible. So that is, I mean, it's something. These days, because we are going through COVID period right now, the lockdown is still on, and we are seeing that all the education is happening online, and this online facilities is again something this people are often they do not have access to, so they're again left out. So all these things are coming in.
So how do you go about reaching out to a person with a disability who might not want to share their experience?
It's extremely difficult because it's not so easy to talk about the abuse or the discrimination one faces. It's quite a difficult thing for people to talk about. So you cannot sort of tell them to come out and talk about their stories of the discrimination and violence. But what we try to do is we try to talk about the positive impact that when we have case studies. So if we talk about that, then somewhere we see that people start talking about it a little bit, and they feel it might make a bigger impact. Because here again, it's every personal issue is not always only personal, it's actually political in nature. So once they understand that this is important, then they talk about. But even then, I don't think many people do not want to talk about, and we cannot force anyone to talk about. That is the issue.
So, in your time working in disability advocacy, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
For me, at individual case level, of course, we fought court cases and that is something, I mean, we know it's very extremely difficult when you're talking about abuse and going to court, because courts have their own rules, own kind of setup. So that is something, when one case is on, it's extremely important. But for me, at a personal level, it was a great moment when we could include the issues of disabled women in the rape laws of my country, because when we got a chance and when we went, there was a gang rape case which happened in New Delhi, which became quite famous, and she was not disabled, but then the government was forced to change the laws. And so when the committee was formed and we were called to give to talk about this particular issue, they said that we are not getting enough case studies. So that, I think, is a big change, because we could make them think of that this is an important area, and the committee's suggestion was accepted by government. So that get through, because it's in a generic law for women, the women with disabilities is not included.
So when was this law changed?
This was in 2013.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling me.
My pleasure.
This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Tammy Yates from Realize. So tell me a little bit about Realize.
Great. So Realize is a national charity that works within both the HIV sector as well as the disability sector in Canada. With respect to the work that we do in the disability sector, we host the Secretariat of the National Episodic Disabilities Forum. And of course, the first question that people ask is, what is episodic disabilities? So traditionally, the paradigm around disability has been that you are either living with a disability or not living with a disability, or that the disability is short-term or long-term, or physical or neurocognitive, etc. However, there are a number of long-term health conditions, very often chronic conditions, that are episodic or have periods of illness and wellness within which you are either limited in what we call the activities of daily living, or your periods of wellness return in a much more fluid way. Now, go ahead, Kat.
So that would seem to have a connection with the HIV work you mentioned, in that there may be periods that a person is stronger or less visible in the symptoms, so that's an interesting
thing. Exactly, Cam. You hit the nail on the head, because the work that we do around episodic disability really started and was grounded by our traditional work in HIV. Because as many of us are aware, traditionally, HIV, was a very different condition than what it looks like today. And there would be very frequent periods of illness or wellness, or when people could do those functions of activities of daily living, like, for example, going into work, because there may have been, again, side effects from medication and so on. However, HIV, thankfully, looks very different today for those who are on treatment and who have access to, other social determinants of health. However, there are other conditions like MS, multiple sclerosis, like certain forms of mental health illness, epilepsy or others, where again, we see those periods of limitations or periods of activity.
So how do you go about clearing up the myths surrounding episodic disabilities? You mentioned there isn't always an understanding that it can be an on-again, off-again state.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing that we always do is education, raising awareness, because it's so interesting, Cam, that you bring that topic up. Because I think even up to maybe, I would say, 3 to 4 years ago, we first started this work 21 years ago, and the term episodic disability was not in anyone's vocabulary. In fact, it was our founding executive director, Elise Zach, as well as one of our academic partners, Kelly O'Brien, who initially coined the term episodic disability, and other organizations of conditions, long-term, chronic conditions, as I mentioned, then saw themselves mirrored in what we described as episodic disability. So it's taken us 21 years for the term episodic disability to even resonate not only with the disability community, but also with policymakers and even with people living with what we would consider a condition that is episodically disabling. And very often when we do presentations, when we talk on, say, radio programs or television programs, or attend meetings, people come to us and say, oh my gosh, I see myself in what you've described, or I know someone who is living with an episodic disability or an episodic condition. Now, that does not mean that there's one definition of episodic disability, because again, there are so many long-term conditions that can be described in this way that people will sort of manifest, you know, those episodes of illness and wellness in very different ways.
So, in your time with Realize, what's been the greatest success you've witnessed?
I would have to say, doubling back to the question that you just asked, with respect to people knowing what episodic disability is. For example, the Accessible Canada Act, when that received, as we were going through that process, and when it received royal assent, and we saw the final version, an episodic disability was actually, and that's the first federal legislation in which terminology around episodic disability is included. We were in the office, I mean, like going, you know, like yahoo, because it meant that the 21 years of us doing this work with all of our partners within the Episodic Disability Forum bore fruit. Because now, for example, in the eligibility criteria for the recently launched Canada Emergency Student Benefits, again, episodic disability is included. In the updated Family Leave Act in Ontario, I think that was like 3 or 4 years ago, episodic disability is included. And yesterday, there was a news article on the regulations with respect to flights that are within the federal jurisdiction, the transportation regulations related to flying. An episodic disability is actually included within that. So the one of, I mean, there have been so many, but I think one of has been the fact that, you know, we go into spaces now, and sometimes we, around the Episodic Disability Forum, are not the first to jump up to speak about episodic disabilities. We have others who are doing that as well.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, thank you.
Of course.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Disability Studies Students Association is a small and tight-knit community of people who are passionate about and committed to representing and supporting disability studies students at the University of Windsor. The DSSA holds events on campus and in the community, like the annual Down Syndrome Day Walk, to raise funds for supporting organizations. If you would like to get involved or learn more, you can contact the Disability Studies Student Association directly at dssa@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Shampas and Gupta from the Cerruti Disability Rights Center, and from Tammy Yates from Realize.
In this segment of our show, we'll be chatting with Teresa Grossi from the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. So tell me a little bit about the Institute.
The Indiana Institute on Disability and Community is a designated university center for excellence on developmental disabilities and is part of Indiana University. So we are considered Indiana's center for excellence. There are approximately 64 plus designated university centers for excellence across the country, funded by the Administration on Community Living. We at the Indiana Institute look at our work around a lifespan approach. Our work is conducted through centers within the Institute, looking at from early childhood, K-12, secondary transition and employment, community capacity building, collaborative systems change, and health issues, in addition to a host of other issues that emerge that a center may take on. I think the simplest way to talk about our work is that we impact systems change through research, service, education, training and technical assistance, capacity building areas across the state of Indiana. We have a number of partners that we've worked through with over the years. In fact, this year, the Indiana Institute is celebrating its 50th year as a designated university center for excellence. And so our work is the staff of about 130 staff. The majority of the staff, when we are not in a COVID-19 pandemic, spend the majority of their time traveling the state. Sometimes we like to think about it as boots on the ground, either doing research and evaluation projects, training and technical assistance, or coaching within early childhood centers, daycares, schools, local school districts, agency providers, whether it's independent living centers or community rehabilitation programs that provide a vast number of services to individuals, or dealing with things in jails. We have a project going on that has dealt with jails as well. So we really cover the state of Indiana to build that capacity and impact systems change. A number of our projects also impact policy analysis.
So I'm curious about this jails project. Does it relate to how it would impact someone with a developmental disability then?
Yeah, it's really starting out as a diversion project that they do know there's a number of individuals with mental health and other disabilities that are in the system that really aren't getting the appropriate services that they need. So it is just an evaluation project to help local communities implement diversion programs for individuals and get them the appropriate services.
So what are some of the services lacking that you found to date?
You know, we continue to, in partnership with our state and local partners, expand opportunities from higher ed and inclusive parks and recs and other options. I think it's not as much of, well, it could be what's lacking of programs, but it's also about just the capacity for states and local providers, meaning early childhood schools, adult agencies, to have the capacity to address the need. I think the need is greater than the capacity and the funding.
So, in your time with the Institute, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Oh, there are many, many success stories. Well, I've been with the Institute for about 21 years, so I have to go back and think about, but where policies have changed because of our work in the data collection and evaluation of programs, there's many examples of that, from early childhood to school age to definitely adult programs. My own experience of work evaluating a number of different pilot demonstrations across the state that has changed the way state agencies operate, such as voc rehab, of looking at new employment models and funding, how they funded the employment models. I think services to families have really changed. I think most recently, I could say that we are seeing more and more self-advocates coming to the table, being an equal partner in our policy decisions and procedure decisions. In fact, I'm working on a project with the state right now that I'm just really pleased to see that no conversation goes on without individuals with disabilities and or family members at the table.
So what message would you send to the community about the work going forward?
It really is an education awareness to open doors, that there are resources to help build the local capacity. There's resources to help build employment capacity for opening those doors to make sure that individuals are part of their community. We know from both research and lots of data that individuals, as they grow up, become contributing citizens in that community through paying taxes, through employment, volunteering, and using the goods of the community. So it behooves everyone to partner together to help build that local capacity.
So how do you go about getting around some of the myths out there about disability and really form those connections within the community?
You know, there's so many myths here. That's a great question. And, you know, people do fact sheets and people do these videos. But in my own experience, a lot of times it's about building that local relationship and ensuring that you're providing that support. What I know from my experience, employers talk to employers. People have their own little circle of associations and groups, and when those successes happen, that's how we start developing, or I should say, changing the myths that are out there. Building those relationships, knowing people are have good intentions, but they may not have the knowledge of how to do it. So there sometimes is some fear-based, and it's real fear-based because they're not sure what to do. So I think our job is to help support employers and community leaders and government entities to show them how it could happen.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
All right.
Today's interviews, my friends, were a reminder to me that even in the worst of situations, there's an opportunity for growth, a chance, a potential, if you will, to change things for the better, expanding the rights of people with disabilities while you're expanding the law anyway. Great example of this, coming out of a horrific circumstance, but in an effort to improve things for the future, recognizing that people with disabilities have value in society, can start to turn the tide towards something a little more respectful and hopefully with greater wisdom. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.